right, we are live.
Looks green to me.
Looks green. Okay, so I'd like to open. Today is February the 9th, 2017. I'd like to open up a information meeting, a Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. The information meeting is going to be on assessment of rates and rates overview, and we have a presenter who is the DAS Chief Financial Officer. Sir, would you come forward, please, and for the record, state your name and give me the rest of the information about you, just in case I don't understand what you're talking about.
Senator Manning, Chair Manning, members of the committee. I'm George Naughton. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the state of Oregon. So on your side, you have Ken Rocco, who's the legislative fiscal officer, who advises you on financial matters. I am the person that advises the governor. Same thing on the governor's side, on the executive branch. So my authority area is really making recommendations about the entire state budget, which the governor then produces. My shop puts together the governor's recommended budget, which comes out on December 1st. As part of my portfolio, though, a couple years ago, was added to me not just the statewide responsibilities, but also managing over the Department of Administrative Services budget specifically. And Janet Savaro, who's with me, is the manager who specifically watches over the DAS budget. What Mr. Siebert asked us to do today, and Mr. Borden, is come in and give you basically a primer on one of the most complicated issues that you will face in front of the committee, which is what we call assessments and charges for service and how we fund a variety of central government functions. So that's what this is primarily just to educational and give you information as you go through the process over the next several weeks dealing with some of these central agencies to know how the revenue streams flow within those and how it impacts various budgets. So with that, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I'll go ahead and get started into this. Please stop me if you have questions. This is complicated, and I'll try and keep it fairly straightforward, but there's some history here that is actually a little helpful to understand. So let me first start by saying that what we're talking about today comes into two places. It is state government service charges and charges for service that will show up in every other agency budget throughout the rest of state government. And what we're doing here is we're basically figuring out how do we charge for central functions and spread it out across the entire enterprise. Now, a little bit of history for this. Inside of the Department of Administrative Services, for example, there are two primary functions. The first function is what my shop does, the Chief Financial Office, which is basically watching over the rest of state government. We're kind of the police, if you will, setting the rules for how agencies have to do their accounting, how they report their budget, what information they bring forward, and what is the basically building blocks that legislative fiscal office uses, for example, and how agencies present their financial information. That's a control function. Back in the early 1990s, prior to 1993, that function, that central agency function, was inside of what we call the executive department, and that agency was funded with general fund. So as we get into the various fund types, it was central money from the state's discretionary pot that was used to provide that oversight, that control function over the rest of state government. The second function that is now currently in the Department of Administrative Services is actually providing services to other agencies. So the Department of Administrative Services is the landlord for most of the state agencies. DAS owns the buildings that are on the Capitol Mall, for example, and we charge rent to each of the agencies that actually occupy that building. And from that rent, we have a depreciation fund that we actually do the upkeep and the maintenance on those buildings. But it's a charge for the service that's actually occurring. Likewise, we have a state fleet that is managed by the Department of Administrative Services, and every agency, as they rent a car from us, ends up paying for that rental fee.
I have a question. Thank you, Mr. Kocher. Quick question. How you doing, sir?
Good.
Good seeing you.
Very good, Representative.
I know on the building rentals that they have to fluctuate based upon the type of building, location, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But on the fleet vehicles, is every agency charged the same rate? If I get a Toyota Tercel or whatever, am I charged the same rate whether I'm in Business Oregon or Department of Corrections?
Chair Manning, Representative Smith, you are charged the same rate depending on the vehicle you choose. So
sure.
If you get a 4x4, it's going to be a different rate than a sedan.
You bet.
But every agency gets the same rate across the spectrum.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Yeah. So these other services were in this General Services Agency, Department of General Services. So we had Executive Department doing the control functions and Department of General Services doing the service provision, if you will. In 1993, something pretty significant happened that changed the way that we set these things up. The first one, it was a period where it was actually before my time, but there was a merger of a variety of different state agencies. And these two different functions were merged together, Executive Department and General Services, into what we now call Department of Administrative Services. So that control function was now blended with the providing of services. Still operationally inside, I am still a control function. Chief Financial Office is still a control function. We have what we call an enterprise asset management that does all the facility maintenance, the rental of vehicles, and things like that, but they were all now inside of this one agency. The thing that made this all very complicated for you and for us is that there was also a cost-saving measure that occurred in 1993. They looked at those functions that had been general fund, these control functions, and decided we could save general fund by spreading those costs across all state agencies. So this is similar to the Department of Environmental Quality, which is a regulatory function. It charges out businesses for the actual provision of that regulation. The way that this occurred in 1993 is what had been 100% general fund now shifted to what you'll see in a slide in just a minute, 46% general fund, because it's now paid by each of the individual agencies and a mix of other funds and federal funds, depending on the various agencies they're being charged. So that action in 1993 created this mechanism where we basically charge these services out to the rest of state government. And that leads to the current Department of Administrative Services that has this blend of state government service charges and actually charges for service. Now, when you build a budget for an agency, and you'll see this with all of your other fund agencies, you have basically the budget that you will approve. And next week, for example, you'll have the Department of Administrative Services, and you will go through the expenditure side of the Department of Administrative Services in a fair amount of detail, seeing what's being added or subtracted. The revenues that come into the agency, whatever level of expenditure you approve, we have to make sure there's enough revenue coming into that agency to meet those expenditures that you actually set up. For each of these divisions inside the Department of Administrative Services, that revenue has to be a combination of how much we're going to charge in the next biennium, what we call state government service charges and fee for service, and how much they may or may not be carrying forward from the prior biennium. So every one of these agencies has cash on hand that they didn't spend from the prior biennium. And that balance is what you'll actually see. But generally speaking, every agency needs to have more revenue than they're actually spending in order to cover unexpected events and deal with capital work cash flow issues inside the agency. For example, when we look at assessments, certain agencies are charged on a quarterly basis. Certain of them are charged on a 30-day basis. So there needs to be working capital to cover those transitional costs. When we talk about the state government service charge specifically, though, it's not just DAS. The majority of it is DAS, but as you can see on this slide, it's a number of other central entities that we actually charge out. So first of all, the Government Ethics Commission is charged out to various state agencies. Capitol Mall Security, which is provided by Oregon State Police, so all the security on the Capitol Mall is basically charged out to all state agencies. The State Law Library, the Law Library at the Judicial Branch and the Supreme Court Building, the Certification Office for Business Inclusion and Diversity, which used to be called the Office of Minority Women and Emerging Small Business. Secretary of State Audits and Archives are sent out as an assessment on state agencies, and debt management under the state treasury. The final piece is central government service charges, which also is basically some of the costs for the legislative assembly are also basically charged out to these various agencies.
Yes.
Thank you. First of all, colleagues, I apologize for my absence during most of this week. I actually do belong to this committee, and I'm here today. So a couple of things, and this is going to be old news, Mr. Naughton. We've had this conversation before. I keep looking for some efficiencies in all of this. We have three law libraries. I could stand here and with a good wind any direction, I could hit all three of them. I'm trying to understand why we maintain three law libraries. in a time of fiscal constraint when lots of stuff is online. And I certainly, those people that are listening are going to start saying Johnson hates libraries. I don't. I'm just trying to figure out why we have these redundant costs when we are blessed to have multiple libraries within a stone's throw of this building. That's number one. Number two, the central government service charge just seems a little vague for my purposes today. Colleagues, especially new colleagues, and I would ask Co-Chair Smith to correct me if I start lying here. The central government service charges includes things like my old friend Scenic, the data center?
Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, the central government service charges do not.
Okay. Well, are
state government service charges, it is one of the assessments that comes through from DAS.
Okay. What I'm looking for the edification of the committee is a list of all of these. They look like nice words up there, but they are enormous costs to agencies. And it has always been my opinion, and I've done DAS's budget every year since I've been here, that DAS has the ability, when things look bleak, to just turn on the tap and there's more assessment. I have never understood how things get added to the assessment menu. I don't really understand how it works, and the point I'm making for our new colleagues is I've been here a long time, I've done this budget a long time, and this is shrouded in mystery for me. It would be very helpful to understand if where the actual numbers are, and if you could enumerate the central government charges, and you could specify state data center. Because what I would like for new colleagues to see is the breathtaking amount of money. Lots of it general fund that sloshes through these agencies, but we're responsible for. And so I'm making a little plea for accountability and transparency in turning these nice words that sound fine into a little more detail for the benefit of some of the fiscal hawks that may be among us.
Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, I hope this presentation will shed some of that light. We're going to get into these conversations about each of the DAS divisions.
I will restrain myself in my probe for details as you soldier through your presentation.
Very good, Senator.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Yes, Co-Chair.
Senator Johnson, I would just share with you my good co-chair and John and myself have asked that we get down to an eighth grade level of conversation as it relates to the central government service charges. In their explanation to us with great detail and clarity. And so we're hoping we'll hear about that today, and we're all going to come out of here enlightened and knowledgeable of how this works.
So, Chair Manning, I will also say that this will be the first of many conversations. For many of you, this is going to be your first blush of this. And as I said at the beginning, this is one of the more complicated issues you will deal with. We will cover it today. Some of it will sink in, then we'll talk about it next week with some of DAS, and then we'll continue to revisit this issue. This is complicated. I completely recognize that. So with that, members of the committee, I wanted to highlight, going back to what Senator Johnson was mentioning a second ago, when we look at how much of this money and why do we care, why do you care, is because 46% of these assessments that we do, these state government service charges, are the blue part, which is general fund. So when you look at the assessments across all of state government, 46% of that is actually general fund dollars. So both the legislature and the governor's office look at DAS like a general fund agency, because really cuts into the DAS budget are also saving general fund throughout the system.
I can't stand it, Mr. Chair. Would you turn that 46% into money?
Chair Manning,
please.
We can do that. I don't have that off the top of my head. We have a slide in a second that you'll see that lays some of this out as far as a general fund amount. The second on the right-hand side of this slide, well, actually, before I leave the left-hand side of this slide, 46% of that is general fund. 38% is other funds. This would be charges to the various other fund agencies throughout the rest of state government. 15% of it is federal dollars. Again, when this occurred in 1993, when they moved to this kind of model, they in essence paid 46 cents for every dollar that DAS had been charging out for the old executive department as general fund. On the right is just a scale question about how much of those state government service charges are actually coming from the various agencies. And you'll see that DAS, which is the blue part, is the vast majority of it at 78%. The Secretary of State is second with that 11% that's sitting there. And again, that's audits and archives for the most part. Now, this is specifically on DAS, and now we're going to start to get into some numbers, and the rest of the presentation I'm going to give you is going to be focused on the DAS side, and we'll give you dollar amounts here so that you can actually see it. I have less knowledge about the other assessments, the state government service charges out there, but we can get very clear on the DAS side of it. Inside the Department of Administrative Services, you'll see that there are about 8 different divisions, if you will. And each of those divisions has a different mix of how much of their services are these assessments, these charges out for this regulatory function, and how much is actually these charges for service. On these charts, the charges for service are the blue part, and the assessments are the green part. And then on each of the slides that we're going to do after this, we'll dive into each of these different divisions individually so you can see what the methodology is or what the basis is on how we charge the various agencies. When you look at Department of Administrative Services today, though, what you see is that those regulatory functions that I mentioned earlier, which is encapsulated in the Chief Operating Office, which is the COO, the Chief Financial Office, and the Chief Human Resource Office, those are the primary regulatory functions. The CFO, Chief Financial Office, monitors the financial spending of the agencies. The Chief Human Resource Office monitors and watches over all the personnel activity that's happening and sets the rules for that. And the Chief Operating Office is really the entity that's overwatching all of state government, all of this working in concert together. Most of those functions are fairly exclusively funded with assessment dollars because, again, that's the regulatory function on the rest of state government. When you move into enterprise asset management and enterprise goods and services, those are the ones that are actually providing services more directly to the various agencies. Again, this is the fleet and actual fleet management and also facilities management.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. Again, for our new colleagues, you went through the Chief Financial Officer, the Chief Human Resources, but one thing that I think we ought to be mindful of is that the agencies also have human resources, financial, technology. And so when I first showed up here in Salem, I sort of believed that DAS was the mothership and HR, if you needed guidance, and in the interest of full disclosure, I ran an agency for 5 years. I thought that was the final word. It isn't. We duplicate again in all of the agencies these functions. And I have repeatedly asked why the duplication. And sometimes it's been my experience, you have differing opinions coming out of the agency folks and DAS. And if you could help with some comment on the duplication and why it is cost effective and efficacious to have all of these functions here and then duplicate many of them in the bigger agencies.
Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, what I would posit to you is that for the same reason that you have a legislative fiscal staff to give you oversight of what's happening and have a team of professionals that can really look into what's happening, the governor needs the same thing. We're looking, as I can speak specifically for the Chief Financial Office, we have a $70 billion enterprise with 41,000 people in it. She has a Chief Financial Office that are people that she can trust, and I've worked for 3 different administrations now, who she can turn to or he can turn to and know that they're getting unbiased information. And we, like the Legislative Fiscal Office, works for you and they are dedicated to you. They are loyal to you. The governor knows that the Chief Financial Office is loyal to her or him in that position. That is, quite frankly, what the oversight function is. There is absolutely duplication. I am not managing the budget for the Department of Human Services, but I have an analyst who is watching, just like Legislative Fiscal Office, very closely what's happening, and at times we stop them and say, we don't agree with what you're actually proposing. And then I make recommendations to my boss of alternatives, just like your Legislative Fiscal Office makes alternatives to all of you.
Thank you.
Yep.
Mr. Kutcher.
Yes, Kutcher.
Thank you, Mr. Kutcher. Specific question back on the state motor pool. And I promise I'm not pro, but I'm just more curious on this stuff.
Good.
How many other agencies have a motor pool besides DAS? Does Department of Corrections have a motor pool? Let me rephrase my question. Are there other agencies with their own motor pools?
Chair Manning.
Besides state police.
Chair Manning, Representative Smith, there absolutely are. And we can get you the list of which other agencies have their own motor pool.
Quick follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Has there been any analysis to determine the efficiency or lack of efficiency of having multiple motor pools rather than just having DAS be our central motor pool agency?
Chair Manning, Representative Smith, that's a great thing that we can bring back to you next week when we actually bring in Enterprise Asset Management, which is the agency that actually manages inside of DAS. There are reasons why you have different agencies that might have their own motor pool. Department of Transportation, for example, has very specialized equipment they're using. It doesn't make sense for us to maintain those kind of things for them.
And I get that. What I'm getting at, though, is, again, the Ford Explorer.
Yes.
I wonder if there would be savings, purchasing power savings, of having one entity purchasing those vehicles rather than dividing it up among multiple agencies.
So, Chair Manning, Representative Smith, we can absolutely make that part of our conversation next week when Enterprise Asset Management is in front of you.
I appreciate it. And I don't know if I'm chasing something that's not worth chasing. I'm just curious.
Actually, members of the committee, I would say this is a conversation that happens on a fairly routine basis. And Brian King, who's the fleet manager, I know has been part of these conversations in the past. And we can certainly get that information, make it part of the conversation next week.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, okay. Mr. Chair.
Yeah, just kind of follow up. So the trend that I'm seeing, or the questions as they're coming from Co-Chair and Senator Johnson, is that we're looking at this big deficit of $1.8 billion, and we have duplication of services and throughout the system, and possibly, what are the chances of consolidation? I know that a lot of the different organizations and stuff do that. For example, the Army, which I'm really knowledgeable about, they did a lot of consolidations to include dining facilities, motor pools, and, even though the vehicles and stuff were very unique for specific jobs and stuff, they consolidated in order to save obviously what we're trying to do. So I think that that's one of the things that moving forward that I would like to have some follow-up discussion later on.
Mm-hmm. And Chair Manning, members of the committee, I would tell you that as far as there's a difference between the control functions, which is the central organizations that are overwatching these different areas, and a lot of these services that are being provided are there because there has been consolidation. So there was a big, as I'm sure Senator Johnson will weigh in at a certain point, this thing we call Enterprise Technology Services was an effort to consolidate state data centers across the state. Some of it went well. Some of it didn't go well, as it does with when you do consolidations. And the state CIO, Alex Pettit, has been working very hard to get these things in place. There is in the governor's budget for this next cycle a consolidation of security functions, for example, across state government. So there are places many of these service side is because there has been consolidation in the past. That's why we have a primary fleet organization.
Senator Johnson.
You've raised one other disconnect for me, and that is Mr. Pettit and I in this very room have gone round and round about a lot of stuff. Given the heavy emphasis on technology and the vulnerability that we have to hacking, mm-hmm. I find the construct now of Mr. Pettit working directly for the governor rather than in DAS extremely complicating. And in his presentations before Ways and Means, I've asked for system improvements, and it's been, we can't get there from here. Our organization is all wrong. And I don't recall why it was that we moved the chief information officer from that place where all the information oversight happens to functionally a policy position within the governor's office when we still have the degree of vulnerability that we have. I understand we're getting hacked with some regularity right now. And I believe that there's a bill to try to create a freestanding agency that is being advanced by Mr. Pettit. But I'm trying to understand, why did the CIO depart from DAS?
So, Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, that was a result of House Bill 3099 that originated inside the chamber on this side. So for those who are not familiar with some of the history, what you see on this chart is all the various Department Administrative Services Division. The two on the far right, OSCIO, which is the Oregon State Chief Information Officer, which is Alex Pettit, and the one on the far right, Enterprise Technology Services, that is the primary IT functions for state government. OSCIO does the security functions and the oversight of all IT functions. They monitor projects that are going forward, making sure that there's enough rigor by the agencies to make sure the projects are successful, or if they're not successful, raising the flags on them. Enterprise Technology Services is really the central data center kind of functions. Now, to get back to Senator Johnson's question, when we look at DAS, inside of DAS, those two divisions on the far right, CIOS, CIO, and ETS, do not report to the agency director, Katie Koba. They report through Alex Pettit directly to the governor, even though they're still physically inside the budget for Department of Administrative Services. As to why, Senator Johnson, I think the belief was that that would give higher direct access for Mr. Pettit in front of the governor, because we had a number of projects that weren't working very well. And so there was a desire to get direct access for the CIO to the highest levels. But again, that was a measure that moved through the legislative process initiated on this side. And I will let Mr. Pettit answer for himself. He will be up next week, a week from today, and I'm sure you'll have plenty of opportunity to talk with him about that.
You might give him a heads up that I'm going to ask, how's that working out for you?
Fair Manning, I will leave that as a rhetorical question. He will be duly alerted. And I think he's aware of this conversation. So going back to the slide deck in front of us, those primary oversight functions are really encapsulated: Chief Operating Office, Chief Financial Office, Chief Human Resource Office, and again, the Office of the State CIO, which is that next to last on the side. Enterprise Asset Management is really the function that is the provision of facility maintenance, leasing for all of state government, and then the state motor pool that we talked about. Enterprise Goods and Services is two major things. It is the state's procurement functions, it's the state's accounting functions, and the third one, which is the primary assessment model, is they run the state's risk fund, which is basically the state insurance company for anything that's coming that's either property damage, and that's why that large assessment there. We assess agencies like an insurance company does based on your prior history of whether or not your agency is having claims filed against it, and that's the methodology, but we'll talk about that in a few minutes.
Mr. Co-Chair?
Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you. Share with me the types of claims, or share with the committee what, I'm not looking for specifics, but give me examples of claims that we might have to deal with.
So, Chair Manning, Senator Smith, Representative Smith, it can be any number of things. It can be when a state employee backs their car into another vehicle and we get sued because we've damaged another vehicle. It can be because the Department of Human Services has a case manager that didn't provide oversight enough in a foster care situation, and we get sued. It can also be, under recent changes, our Department of Transportation has been sued because people have had an accident on the road, and with tort limits the way they are, we have become a target for a number of different causes of action to pay for various damages that may directly or indirectly come to the state of Oregon.
So do we have an estimate of what that annual average cost is to the state? Could you have somebody find that out?
Chair Manning, Representative Smith, we certainly can. Now, I'll also tell you, just I know there's another question coming, but the state gets sued on a variety of other things. Our Parks Department was sued, for example, over in Pacific City because a dory boat ran over someone and a limb was basically cut off. The state of Oregon was sued. The Parks Department was sued because of that accident. So there's a whole bunch of lawsuits that will come against the state of Oregon for a variety of reasons.
Okay, I need to follow up just really quick. I apologize because I know you have to manage time here. So we're self-insured on that. Is that?
Chair Manning, Representative Smith, that is correct. We are self-insured.
Because we're a budget committee, that would be good to know just approximately what do the co-chairs have to take into consideration as they're creating their budget?
Chair Manning, Representative Smith, we'll definitely make sure that that's part of the conversation.
Would you do that? Okay, thank you.
And if we forget, please remind us. So.
Senator Johnson.
The other thing that I'd like to understand is that unlike a real insurance policy, yes or no, Parks gets sued for that tragedy in Pacific City. Does Parks assessment from you guys go up as a result of DAS recouping that? So it isn't really an insurance policy. It's sort of risk management.
Mm-hmm. Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, I would agree that that is correct. The assessment for each agency is based on their prior experience over the last, I believe it's 4 years, actually, 4 or 5 years. But it is... The assessment for each agency is basically a rolling average of what your costs have been, your prior assessments.
One follow-up. Do the agencies that are going to be charged get the opportunity to participate in any meaningful way with DAS, with respect to the efficacy of litigation or settlement and the fact that the agency is going to have to pay if DOJ decides to just settle it out for $20 gazillion to avoid the litigation costs, and the agency is going to get whacked with the chargeback. How does that work?
So, Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, this is a very good question. It's a one that happens all the time. The agencies are consulted. The final decision, once we get into settlement conversations, though, is not necessarily the agency. The DAS director can make the decision that we are going to settle this case, even against the agency's desires, if we believe that it is actually more cost beneficial. That gets down to, as it would with any insurance company, a decision about what you believe your risk exposure is once you get actually into a lawsuit. It is very common that you'll have an agency director that wants to fight to the death on something, but risk assessment comes down and says, no, we think there's a high risk of unfavorable action at the outcome. That is a decision the DAS director can make independent of the agencies. They're certainly consulted, but at a certain point, they do not drive that conversation. Okay. So, members of the committee, again, the other thing I want to mention on this slide is just a scale question. We're going to use the same scale for all the slides that you're going to see. The big dollar amounts inside the Department of Administrative Services is really inside of those three primary service provision sides, which is the enterprise asset management, the facility side, enterprise goods and services, and then also the enterprise technology services. The other thing you can see here is the relative amount that comes in as assessments or charges for service. Now this gets into the, we're going to start now with all the slides. You're going to see what is the current amount in the 15-17 biennium for each of these divisions, and then what is proposed in the governor's budget, just so you can see what is changing up and down between the two. So the slides I'm about to show you is going to have some information by each of the divisions. It'll have the methodology for each of the divisions, and then it'll have on the left side current 15-17, what's budgeted in total statewide. And then also on the right side is the 17-19 biennium. So to get to Senator Johnson's earlier question, why DAS is a big deal as far as all of you are concerned out in the agencies, about $550 million in the current biennium is being assessed out to state agencies, either through assessments or charges for service out to the various agencies. And remember, roughly 46% of that is general fund when it flows to the other side. Now, to go back to some of the conversation earlier by Chair Manning about the efficiency side, many of the things that DAS is doing is actually providing service directly for the agencies because it is more cost efficient for DAS as a central place because of economies of scale to do it. It's much more efficient for there to be one landlord for state of the state of Oregon as opposed to having every agency maintaining their own facility for economy of scale purposes. So we'll start through each of these individually and just kind of hit the highlights for you. The Chief.
Mr. Couture. Thank you. Sorry to interrupt you.
It's all good.
Who makes the final decision on whether or not an agency uses DAS services or uses their own agency services?
Chair Manning, Representative Smith, it depends on the product line we're talking about. Agencies do not get to choose whether or not my office, Chief Financial Office, provides oversight. The governor makes that decision regardless of what they want to do or not. When it comes down to whether an agency wants to rent space in a state office building or go out and get a private lease, each agency is going to make that decision for themselves. Agencies can also go out and work on, for example, leasing vehicles independent of us or using our employees using their own cars. That decision can be made by the individual agency. We've had numerous agencies that have purchased services, accounting services, for example, from DAS, and then they have made the decision to go some other route. As you, Representative Smith, have heard 2 years ago, we do not force people if it's that provision of service that they have to come to us. If they want to go somewhere else, we're okay with that. There are certain functions, though, that we are going to tell them you have to use this service for a variety of reasons, usually control functions. But when we merged the state data center, when that occurred in the mid-2000s, that was not a choice given to agencies. Okay. And it did not go very well from their perspective.
Okay, committee members, I think we have, nine more slides? How many more you have to go through? If we could, unless you really have a burning question and stuff, if we can kind of hold back so we can get through the slides so we don't leave anything out.
Good. Thank you, Chair Manning. So the first of this that we're going to see is the chief operating office. This, again, is the manager that the governor relies on, Katie Koba, Director Koba, who is really the manager for all of state government. She's the person that the governor looks to manage operations. And their assessment is actually fairly small in the big scheme of things, $7.3 million in the current biennium, $6.9 million in the next biennium. The methodology that's used to charge that out, quite frankly, is just based on FTE counts for the agency. So in each of these assessments, there is a what is the basis on which we spread that cost out. And on each of these slides, we'll let you know what that is. So in this one, what the charges of the chief operating officer get sent out to agencies based on how many people are actually in each of those different agencies. There are lots of different ways to do methodologies for how you charge those services out, and you'll see a variety of them as we go through. Chief Financial Office, which is my specific area, is the second one. It is a 50-50 split, 50% of the assessment, and this is entirely funded with assessment dollars. 50% of the split is actually based on the size of an agency's budget. So the bigger the agency is, the more they pay. And it is 50% split on the number of FTE. So the state school fund, which is in the Department of Education, has very, very few people in it, but is 40% of the state budget. We assess them a higher amount than a small agency with very little dollars and very little people. Likewise, the Department of Corrections has a lot of people, but not as much spend because it's very little of it is going out to other places. So we balance between the size of the budget and the FTE count, which is we refer to full-time equivalent positions. You will hear FTE throughout things, and it's shorthand for positions in a lot of cases. We also have a minimum charge for very small agencies. For agencies that have two or less people, we have a flat charge for a two-year period of $2,500. For agencies that have 2.01 positions, full-time equivalent positions, to 30 positions, we have a flat charge of $5,000 per biennium. And then I think that's it primarily for the Chief Financial Office. Chief Human Resource Office, the assessment methodology there is purely based on FTE count, which makes sense because they are basically managing the people inside of state government. You'll notice that from the current biennium to next biennium, 2017-19, a pretty significant increase in the assessment. And when Madeline Zeich is up here next week, who is the state's chief human resource officer, she'll be talking with you about a replacement project to replace one of our antiquated IT systems, which is our HR system. And she'll be talking about why that increase. This is a good example, though, where the budget decisions that you make as a body will influence how much those assessments go up or down. But that will be a primary point of conversation for next week. Enterprise asset management, again, this is the facilities, the fleet vehicle, the state's fleet, printing services, and I'm sorry, enterprise asset management is facilities, fleet management, are the two primary ones, but also the state surplus property system. Their assessment out to agencies, which is actually very, very small, is based a third on the number of positions in an agency, a third based on the total fund budget, and a third on the land owned by the agency. The blue part is really where most of the money comes in for enterprise asset management, and this is based on what we call the uniform rent rate. Is for every agency that is leasing space from one of the DAS-owned facility, there's a per square foot charge that goes out for each of those. Likewise, for every vehicle that you rent, whether it's on a you have the vehicle for the entire month or it's a hourly rental, which many of our vehicles are, you're charged that way. And there's a leasing fee for every time you actually instigate having a lease for properties that you're actually going after. Most of the money inside of enterprise asset management is this fee-based system for the services that are actually being provided. Enterprise goods and services, this is accounting services, statewide policy on accounting, printing services, risk, and procurement funds. The assessment side is really about procurement services, how many how many contracts are going out basically is a proxy using FTE count. And the risk liability, as we mentioned earlier, is a cost allocation based on the actual usage, based on lawsuits and settlements and things that are flying out there. The fee for service side is basically we charge for the central accounting system based on the number of checks we write, the number of accounting transactions that occur, And likewise, you'll also see on the printing side, it's the number of copies that you're actually printing or the number of jobs that we actually perform for the agency. Enterprise Human Resources is the first, is the last one of the pure DAS part before we get into the IT functions. And this is, there are a number of very small agencies that are not large enough to have their own HR shop. So they contract with the Department of Administrative Services to provide HR professionals to do everything from getting their payroll set up to dealing with FEMLA issues to dealing with when they actually have to take disciplinary actions against employees. And they basically charge for that service directly out to the agencies. Mostly this is for providing a service for very small organizations. Now, the last two slides I have here are really focused on the IT side of the house, and you'll see that there's been a policy change that we worked with Mr. Siebert over the last couple years in this committee. And what you're seeing here in this budget, the chief information officer is the assessment side of this organization is going up pretty significantly from the current biennium to the next. I'm sure Mr. Pettit will cover this when he actually comes in front of you. What's driving this is that the state of Oregon has an increased focus on our security position. We had not been doing as good a job on security, and so there's been an effort over the last 2 to 3 years to really up our game in that area. So two things occurred. The first one is that there were security functions inside the state data center, which will be on the next slide, and those functions were moved from that state data center to the office of the chief information officer directly. And also a proposal in the governor's budget is to centralize all the security staff from across state government into the office of the chief information officer so that there can be one group of people dealing with security across the entire enterprise. So that will be a policy discussion in front of you. So that's really what's happening on the assessment side. It is based, the way that that's allocated is based on the number of positions inside of an agency, and that was worked out with Mr. Siebert 2 years ago when this budget was put together. The fee-for-service side is actually much smaller, and it's related to the number of phones that agencies are using and the number of lines that they're actually processing. The last slide that I have is really the Enterprise Technology Services, which you'll hear also referred to as the State Data Center, or Senator Johnson will refer to it as Scenic, which is the name that was many years ago that
we
typically try not
to. Colleagues, we changed the name to protect the guilty.
I've heard lots of
there's usually adjectives attached to that.
Exactly. There's lots of adjectives.
So Enterprise Technology Services is really two things. The assessment part of this is the state's data center, and most of the large agencies are part of that. It's actually located out by Costco. The state data center is that hub that has all of the infrastructure behind, and I am not an IT person, but is the infrastructure behind the state's network and pulling all that information together. The assessment part of what they do is basically the fixed costs of that operation, so the physical plant and the rest of it to maintain the core system. The other part of it, the fee-for-service charge, is based on the usage, so the number of mainframes that your agency is using, the CPU hours that you're using, the number of ports that you're running, the processing time, the amount of actual storage that your agency is using. And we have gone through a very, very complicated process to try and figure out how to allocate and charge what is the right rate for the usage of computing power inside of the state. And quite frankly, that's been one of the more complicated things that this committee has had to deal with over the last 2 years. It was dealt with partly in the 2015 session, revisited during the 2016 session, and I'm sure that there will be continuing conversations as we go forward. But the big drop that you see here on the assessment side is the movement of that security function primarily into the office of the CIO on the prior page. With that, Mr. Chair, I will stop and see what other questions there might be. And I know this is the first blush of this, and we are available to answer questions. I'm sure you will have them as we go farther into this process.
Well, thank you for that. First off, I wanted to thank the committee members for holding their questions. I thought you had more slides than this, so we'll open it up to questions right now. Senator Johnson.
I guess this is a perennial question for me. We're in pretty tough financial straits right now, And it's my experience in pretty much all the budgets. There might be some notable exceptions. The budget requests are give us what you gave us last year and give us some more. Mm-hmm. I always look to the agency heads for their professional assessment as to where we can find savings. And it seems as though, particularly with DAS, there's this kind of tug of war, us peppering you with questions about the data center and about cars. And it's like Groundhog Day. Mm-hmm. Is there someplace a list of suggestions, or could there be, from DAS to find some savings? Because functionally, if this session doesn't go well, some of the trade-offs in this general fund sloshing through DAS could turn into more teachers or fewer third graders. And I'm looking for that piece of your professional judgment wherein you make recommendations to us about places where there could be efficiencies or cost savings within this behemoth agency.
Mm-hmm. So, Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, this is one of the core problems with these services. So, especially inside of the data center, for example, I'll use that as an example. If you cut the services back there, the trade-off is that there's less computing power that actually agencies, and in this day and age, we need technology is how we're trying to get better in a lot of different areas. So in some cases, the costs that we cut here end up being shifted back to the agencies, sometimes at a higher cost than what was there before. I was primarily responsible for Janet and I putting together what we put in as the governor's budget for this cycle, and there are cuts in the Department of Administrative Services budget. There's also trying to get rates down in lots of different ways. So we are much more aggressively trying to cash manage, for example, dropping working capital from 60 days to 30 days, which puts us at risk, but allows there to be alleviation of rates so that we can actually get more general fund out of the agencies. There's also cuts throughout the budget. There are things that you will see next week when we talk, and each of the divisions will talk about it. There are programs that are being reduced, some of which were added last biennium that we're going to put on the list to be reduced. The core functions inside a lot of these areas are things that the governor wants or that's required by law. Inside of my area, for example, this body and the governor advocate for issuing bonds every biennium. Inside of my office, we were falling behind on actually keeping up with that increasing amount of debt. So what I tell you, Senator, is that there are cuts in here. Some of them are not going to be like, and some of it's aggressively managing the cash, because those are the ones that can actually get you savings without cutting services back in other places.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm not looking to have you, Mr. Naughton, turn directly to the IT piece, which has been the Achilles heel for the state of Oregon for a long time. I'm looking at the more prosaic opportunities. I sat in this very committee a few biennia ago and discovered with horror, and this isn't your watch and it wasn't your fault, that DAS had an incredible amount of empty space. In this year's presentation to Ways and Means, I'd like to know how you're managing the empty space. I'd like to know, are agencies getting the most efficiency out of the space that they're leasing from you? I want to know about deferred maintenance, because we've let maintenance go on some of these buildings to the point that the roof falls off. That's perhaps a little hyperbolic, but the point of the story here is that maybe some of the savings are in the less glamorous than the IT. I've ground on IT a lot because the numbers are so big, but somehow, I mean, ever since I walked in the door here, I've heard about trying to control the costs at DAS, and they just seem to keep going up.
Yep.
And so, are there things that you're doing that you shouldn't be doing?
So, I mean, Chair Manning, members of the committee, Senator Johnson, there are a lot of things that are happening that don't necessarily show up inside of the DAS budget. So, for example, over the last 2 years, we had a huge, and both you and Senator and Representative Smith know this, we spent a lot of effort trying to work on the facility space inside of what was actually done. We much more aggressively managed the leasing for state government and actually were able to drive down rates. I had conversations with several members of the legislative body because our aggressively driving down rates was causing landlords out in different areas to be upset that we were aggressively having those conversations. That savings does not, and when we had those conversations with all of you, the overwhelming thing I heard back during the 15th session was that is the right thing you should be doing. You should be trying to manage better. But those savings don't show up inside of the DAS budget. That is great work that's happening by the leasing team. That shows up in the budget for PERS, which has a $600,000 drop in how much their leasehold is going to be. There's been a significant amount of savings that's been developed on that side. Likewise,
you just used that as an example. I don't want the panel to think that those savings inure to PERS.
So those would be conversations that PERS has been building into their conversation about what their budget would look like in the future. We did absolutely negotiate better rates for them over the long term.
I know, but you're using that as an isolated example. I just don't want anybody to walk away thinking that all of the savings for more aggressive leasing inures to the benefit of PERS.
Yes. And likewise, there's other things that are happening inside of agencies. Inside the Department of Consumer and Business Services, they what we call restacking their building, which is the labor and industry building, and basically went to a smaller footprint. They lowered walls, they moved from cubicles to smaller size, and were basically able to weed out all those various empty spaces throughout the building, and were able to basically bring in some of the team that had been at Cover Oregon that became part of the state's workforce. They were able to move a whole unit in there inside of their existing space. It was a cost avoided. It was not a cost that was savings in the budget, but it would have been a cost to move those employees in. If we hadn't done that, we would have had to lease a lot more square footage. Those are savings that do not show up inside of the DAS budget, but are things that are actually occurring throughout the system.
New subject, new question.
What else? Go ahead.
You said you were going to get a new HR system. We've been fussing with HR for a really long time. As you go out and buy what I can presume will be software and hardware, are you going to, as DAS, be put through the same stage gate rigors as we are imposing on others at this point?
Chair Manning, Sarah Johnson, I would welcome you to ask Madeline Zeich that next week when she comes up. I think she would tell you yes. She is meeting on a regular basis with Mr. Cummings here inside of LFO, as well as the CIO team, and they have been working quite extensively trying to make sure that project gets off to a good start. So, yes, they've been going through the stage gates processes.
Follow one more.
Well, let me get co-chair in, then I'll come back.
I'll let the senator finish, okay. And then I'll jump in.
In doing that, I think of some of the other programs that we've just finished that will come before this committee. DOR occurs to me, and some of the things that were Department of Revenue, forgive me, some of the things that were left out of that calculation. I would hope, given how cumbersome it is for agencies to track employees across a variety of different issues, that somewhere along the line, that new system will be able to give agency directors considerably more speed in accessing employee HR, human resource records, as well as depth of field in what information will be included. And to the degree that you have any expertise in what that system is going to look like or can tee up the presenters who are going to tell us, it would be very helpful to know how comprehensive your budget estimate is and how much agencies have been consulted with respect to what their needs are in being able to access the human resource records of the thousands of employees that work for state government.
Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, so for those who are new onto the committee, the state of Oregon has a very antiquated HR system. It's a flat file system, so it does not keep the history of what we're trying to accomplish. It's extremely cumbersome to use and does not provide information to an agent. It does a good job of tracking transactions so that we can make payroll and do some of those basic functions, but it certainly does not provide modern-day HR services, which there's a plethora of different things that you can actually do with it. So we have been embarking. My first records of starting on this conversation, I think, date back to 2007, and we've been trying for quite a while. There are three big systems out there, where our general ledger system, our HR system, our budget system, and the HR system is the oldest of those that we're trying to get set up. Next week, you'll hear from Madeline Zeich, who's the Chief Human Resource Officer, and she can talk about what that is that we're actually trying to set up. It is trying to move to a modern system that will provide HR intelligence, if you will, to managers as they're doing their job, which they do not currently have. Now, scope is always a question on things like this. I know when we in Legislative Fiscal Office worked several years ago, almost a decade ago, to replace the state's budget system, you can't make a system do everything that everybody wants. So scope becomes a question. You've got to figure out what this actually looks like. And that's part of what Mrs. Ike will be able to talk with you about next week. Many of the new HR systems that are out there will provide functionality that is a dream compared to what we're currently operating with.
Okay. Co-chair?
Thank you, Mr. Co-chair. Gosh, I don't know how long I've been on this committee. I've been here a long time. If I were co-chair, and this is no commentary on our co-chairs, I think they do a great job, but if I was co-chair, I would really be pressing hard to consolidate some of the services that other agencies are using without you. Or, yeah, going back to human resources, to some of the operating, some of those areas, how would you help the co-chair and I to start? I got to be careful. I think at some point in time, John, I think the co-chair, mm-hmm. if it'd be all right with you, Mr. Co-chair, to have you and I sit down with your office to talk about some of these agencies that have chosen to go independent that probably would be better served mm-hmm. by you and could create efficiencies for the state of Oregon. Now, I don't know how that works. Mm-hmm. I don't know the politics that come with that. I'm sure it's pretty ugly. But at some point, I really think we need to have a real conversation. Are there agencies out there that would be better served using Department of Administrative Services rather than one offing it on their own?
Chair Manning, Representative Smith, this is a conversation we've had. Happy to sit down and talk about that. There are these efforts that continue to happen even outside. So, for example, inside the Department of Administrative Services budget, over the last 2 years, there's a conversation between three agencies about consolidating their payroll functions and moving them into a shared function. As a result of that, Department of Consumer and Business Services and DAS came back, I believe, during the December meeting of the emergency board, one of the emergency board meetings, and basically said, we want to move the DCBS payroll function from DCBS to DAS because we think it is actually going to be better actually run there, both from a consistency perspective because we have a lot of people that do that stuff already. And we ended up doing that as part of the emergency board. Now, it doesn't save a ton of money in the big scheme of things. I think DCBS had two people doing it. DAS added one person because we thought that we didn't need two people working on it. So there is savings like that that are happening, but a lot of those are small. The big ones are the things like the consolidation of the data center, which are difficult to pull off in the big scheme, but we would be happy to sit down.
Well, let's push pause on that then. So if I hear you correctly, there's not huge savings to be had by consolidating some of these folks back into you.
Chair Manning, Representative Smith, I would say we have to be careful about it. I think Senator Johnson points out that when we did the scenic merger, we weren't as thoughtful as we should have been on the front side, and it was not well orchestrated, and things for a decade,
I'm struggling with, and I'm probably oversimplifying, but to me, a payroll system is a payroll system, and that payroll check could be just as easily cut through Department of Administrative Services as it could be with some other entity that's choosing to do it on its own.
Chair Manning and Representative Smith, I wouldn't disagree with you, and that's part of why those are the efforts that have actually been going on. But we can certainly sit down with you and Chair Manning and talk through what those might look like.
I think the first step for me would be, can we get a list of those agencies that do use Department of Administrative Service functions?
Yes.
And then those that do not?
Chair Manning and Representative Smith, we certainly can. Now, the thing to remember about this is that a lot of functions, it depends on economy of scale. Once you get to a certain size, uh-huh. it's just as efficient for DHS to run their own payroll system
sure.
as it is for DAS to pick it up.
I'll tell you I'm looking at, like, and I don't know if they're doing it or not, but like the Oregon Youth Authority. I'm looking at those agencies that aren't the largest, yep. but are kind of that mid-size or even some of those smaller that have chosen to go on their own that...
So, Chair Manning, Representative Smith, we can certainly give you a list of which agencies are currently purchasing DAS service by by the different lines of service we're providing. Now, again, what we're talking about for the rest of the committee is there are certain services that we don't mandate that other agencies use. They can choose to purchase, primarily accounting services, payroll services, HR services, where they can contract with DAS to not only be the regulator, but also provide the service directly. So, and certain agencies, they want to keep it themselves because they think they have, they can provide their own HR flavor, for example, how they want to manage their people. And there's good reasons why that may or may not happen.
Excellent.
But we can certainly provide the list of who we provide services for now.
Mr. Cook, sure, can I add to this and then I'll stay quiet the rest of the day?
Go ahead.
Well, I can't promise that, but I'll try.
Just like me.
Can we add to that list those agencies that are also providing similar services for other agencies?
Chair Manning, Representative Smith, I think that we have that information. I think there was work done over the last 2 years that captured a lot of that because there are other agencies that are providing the same services.
They're now usually competing against the Department of Administrative
large,
Services.
I wouldn't say competing, but we are very open, again, to other agencies that are larger
you gotta carry that
providing
one,
that service for other people.
Okay.
So we are at the hour time. We're out of time. If there are additional questions from the committee that we would like.
Pardon interruption, Mr.
We have a half hour. Okay. So, well, let me go around and see if there are any committee members that have any other questions. Representative Nerman?
Good. Thank you, Chair Manning. So, thanks for the presentation. I'm new on this committee, so kind of watching and learning here or something. But when I have been on other Ways and Means subs, and the one thing that kind of strikes me is I see these agencies have this central services budget there, and I look at it and I think, okay, that kind of passes the laugh test of you have to have a certain amount of overhead or whatever. And then I look at DAS's budget on top of that, knowing that some of those are duplicated services. This is a little bit of what Senator Johnson brought up too. But I think you're in a position to kind of see those opportunities maybe better than we are, and to follow up on Representative Smith's comments too, maybe that's something that you could bring to the game, would be some of those opportunities that you see where that's going. I find it hard to believe when you say, like, for the Department of Human Services to do their own payroll, it seems to me like it's just as expensive to cut one check as it is to cut a million checks, almost, you know. So and maybe I'm wrong on that, but I don't know. I'll say also, I kind of I'm on the IT committee also, so I've been kind of bearing on my back some of the things of the ETS consolidation and things like that, and I see that. But I almost think that example is kind of the worst case scenario, to say we're going to take IT, which is kind of a screwed up service that you provide or whatever, and consolidate all these different IT projects, whatever, and just kind of hope that goes well. I get it that when that doesn't go well, that's understandable. But things like fleet management or payroll processing, those kinds of things, and again, I'm open to the possibility that I'm wrong, but it seems like those would be things that would be kind of a easier go to consolidate. So maybe I guess that's more of a comment than a question there. So.
And Chair Manning, Representative Nerman, I would suggest to you a lot of those things have been centralized. And there is a state fleet that is managed by the Department of Administrative Services. There are certain agencies that are outside of that, and we can talk with you about which ones are outside of it. As far as ownership of state property, for example, DAS is the primary owner of the actual real estate that is office buildings. Not all, but there are certain ones, certain agencies. Department of Transportation, for example, has a trust fund. They have to own their own assets. So there is a constitutional reason why they have their own building and they own it themselves. But for a lot of these services that we're talking about, they have already been centralized for that very reason. Now, there are certain things like procurement services, for example, that there's a central function that sets the rules, and they agencies have to run things through. But some of those functions are delegated out to the agencies because they want to manage that relationship with their provider network. So a lot of these things have been centralized, and I don't want you to think that they aren't. That's part of what's inside the Department of Administrative Services. The question is, what's the next incremental thing that you may add? And I guess what I'm trying to posit to this group is that to get real big savings, you have to consolidate a real big function. And when you do the real big functions, whether it's IT or something else, that's where you run into the problem of not potentially doing it well. The consolidation of the smaller stuff is much easier to pull off, but it's the smaller stuff. So I think that's the question is, which ones do you want to focus on?
Thank you.
Other questions from the committee? No other questions? I want to thank you very much for the presentation. It was well thought out. I think you kept it at an eighth grade level like we requested. So it worked out very well for us. And I think that the next meeting we will adjourn. The next meeting will reconvene next Monday at February 13th, and Co-Chair Smith will have the gavel. We are adjourned.
Good job. Thank you.
Are adjourned.
Good job. Thank you.